starting on page 104 in Sanhedrin, seven lines from the bottom, middle of the verse, Kofir Tes. We started learning yesterday about the Mishnah told us that Haboril Aramis Kanorim Purgimbar, a Jewish man has relations with a Goita, then a Kanori can attack him and kill him, as with Pinchas and Zimri and Cosby, which now we're going to talk about at great length. So we talked about what happens if there's no Kanorim, and we said that his punishment is Kores, and things that are going to be with his children. So now the Gemara continues. Ki osir Rav Dini Amar, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he reported Beis Dini Shoch Hashminori, the Beis Din of the Hashminoim, back in the middle of the time of the Second Beis Mikdash, Gozru, they made the following Zera. There was the national Sanhedrin. The Pashtus were not necessarily talking about that. Based in Shoch Hashmonoi could be a based in that they had to get together to deal with issues specifically of that time with the Misyavnim and all sorts of things about that. It's interesting, actually. I came across, I've seen references to, so there's a book by a Yid who wrote, a fellow who became, unfortunately, a Meshumad and became a high-ranking Galach in the 4th or 5th centuries. You're talking like at the end of the time of the Gemara. He mentions, and in the course of his writings, he mentions something about what seems to be a collection of Mishnah from the Hashminoim, he says. So apparently in his times, a few hundred years after that, there was still such a collection. So maybe that has to do with the Beis Din Shel Hashminoi. Anyway, so they made the following zera. Habalam Nochris, the Yid has relations with a Goita. Now, the Torah tells us, last week's parasha, V'lois is chapt in bum, you're not allowed to marry them. However, that's only in... holding on page 104 in Sanhedrin. Yeah. The Torah tells us, V'lois is chapt in bum, it's machlokas, that's Hanoim, actually, whether it refers specifically to the Shiva almost, or all the Goyish nations, but in any case, that's dafka with chasnus, that's dafka if a Yid marries a Goita, Rahman al-Tzlan. Here we're talking about where he has relations with her outside of marriage. So based in Shal Hashmanoi Gozru, they made the following Zera, Habal Anochris, the Yid has relations with a Goita, Chayev Alea Mishum Nashgo. Then he's Chayev Makas Mardus because of four Isurim, which technically don't apply to her, but the based in Shal Hashmanoi said we should consider as though they apply to her, and therefore he's Chayev Makas Mardus Dirabonim. So there was another answer. The question we started with yesterday was, if the Kanoim don't get this guy, then what happens to him? So we talked about Kores, we talked about that his children won't be what they're supposed to be, etc. But now we're saying, in other words, his children from a Jewish wife, obviously, but now we're saying, on top of that, he can also be Chayev Makas Mardus. Nashga, since the Nida, Shifcha, Goya, and Eishas Ish. So now, a Goita can't be Midoraisa, can't be a Nida, there's no such thing. But nevertheless, Rashi says it's Mios, it's something disgusting and a desecration of the Kedusha of the Eibishta, and therefore the Beis Din Shel Hashmonoi imposed the idea that she's considered like a Nida. Even if in fact, right now she's not a Nida. Shifcha, she's like a Shifcha, because the Jewish people are called Gvira, the queen, so relative to us, everybody else is like a Shifcha. Goya, she's an actual Goita, and Eishas Ish, if she's a married woman, then in addition, he's also chayev for that. Again, the fact that she has a marriage to a goy doesn't necessarily have any importance in halacha relative to a yid. A yid has relations with her. In other words, he wouldn't be over minatora on the issue of eishes ish, but midrabanan is based on shochash manoi, then he's over on that as well. He also Rovin Omar, when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, it's not Nashgo, the last one is not Aleph, Eishas Ish, but rather Mishum Nashgaz, and which stands for Niga, Shicha, Goya, and Zoyna. So the fourth one would be Zoyna, in the sense that a Goyish women are promiscuous compared to Jewish women, and therefore they all go under the category of Zoyna, even if this particular one has not done this kind of thing before. The Rambam gives an explanation that maybe the punishment for Zoyna, the Rambam says, would be either if the Yid, takes up with her on a regular basis, like his boyfriend and girlfriend, or if he's a Kohen, where anyway he's also in a Zoyna B'chlal. But if it was a one-time thing with the Yid, then I'm at least the Gilsois, or the standard Gilsois of the Rambam, say he wouldn't necessarily be chayav for Zoyna. Anyway, so why is Rovin saying Zoyna instead of Rav Dimi's Eishas Ish? He says, Abba Mishum Ishus Leslahu, because the Ishus of a Goy doesn't have any validity relative to a Yid. In other words, or more to the point, it actually says, a Goita is usually mufkeres, is usually promiscuous, she's not exclusive, she doesn't consider herself exclusive to her husband, so anyway, so therefore you can't really call her an Ishus Ish. The Idach, whereas Rav Dimi would answer to that, Nishayu Vada Lemifri, as much as the Goyim may be promiscuous, they're not going to let their wives go and be Mizana while they're married to them with whatever Goyish ceremony is considered a marriage for them, so therefore we can't assume that we should call her we should say, in fact, that if nevertheless she is an Eishas Ish and is Mizana, then we can indeed call her an Eishas Ish, and a Yid can be at least a Rabbanon, and a Yid can be Chayiv for that. Okay. More on the topic of Aboyel Aramis. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chisda, Haboli Molech, if the Kanoi comes to Beis Din to ask whether he should do it, Ein Modin Loi, they do not tell him, they do not pask him for him, go and do it. It has to be, this is one of those examples of Halachova Ein Modin. It's only the Mekane himself, only when the person himself feels this zealousness for Hashem's honor, and he doesn't feel the need to ask. So there's a number of reasons that are given for it, one of them being, Taka, what are you doing? You have the presence of mind, you're obviously not so bothered by it. If you think there's time to ask a shayla on it, then obviously you're not such a kanoi, so therefore don't be doing it. Another point of it is, the Rebbe talks about Nesicha. One idea is that we touched on yesterday, that Amman points out the Isser of a Yid with a Goita, even though it's not as explicit in the Torah, and he was saying only the Beis Din Shel Hashmonoi had to outright answer it. Nevertheless, that Amman points out there's something worse in it than all other Arayas, in the sense that if it produces a child, he's not even a Yid. Unlike Arayas, the kid will be a Mamzer, but at least he'll be a Yid. So therefore, it's like this is something beyond even the whole normal parameters of Torah, and therefore you have to have, in order for the Kanoi to be able to do it, he also asks, it has to be completely beyond the normal parameters of Torah, which is you ask a Rav and you do what he says, it has to be that he feels the Kanoi's on his own.
He's putting his life in danger by doing that.
If he asks about that, then it shows that what are you thinking about your own life, and it also shows that he doesn't have that fire of Kanoi's that he's supposed to. Okay. Continues Rabbi Yochanan, v'loy oy, not only that, Elishim Pirash Zimri, v'holge Pinchas, not only that, had Zimri actually withdrawn from Cosby, and then Pinchas had killed him, Nereg Olav, then he could be killed for killing him. The Torah only allows it b'shas maise, and not afterwards. The Sikha, where the Rebbe talks about the idea behind that is because only b'shas maisa can you say that now, he's in the process of bringing kochus into klippus, into shalosh klippus atmeis, and therefore that's the moment when you can get him. Afterwards, it's already a done deal. He already brought the energy into shalosh klippus atmeis. It's too late to do anything. The only thing you can do at that point is Beis Din can deal with him again. They can give him makas malus, etc., but the kanoi couldn't do that. Furthermore, Netach Zimri Hogel Pinchas. Furthermore, what if Zimri had turned around and killed Pinchas in Neragolov? Then he wouldn't be able to be killed for that because Sharei Roidefu. Because after all, Pinchas is coming as a Roidef, and Zimri has every right to kill a Roidef who is attempting to kill him. Pinchas really is putting his life in danger, Begashmius and Beruchmius, in the sense that, the Der HaTeva, as Zimri might well, or any of the other people over there we're going to talk about soon, many Nissim happened to Pinchas, then he really was putting himself in tremendous danger. A couple of achronim deal with the angle on lahalacha. The din is that it was talked about earlier in the Masechta, that as far as killing a roidif, we touched on it earlier in connection with Yoav and the whole story on all the stories surrounding him and Avner and all that if there's a way of getting rid of the roidif without actually killing him, then you're taka not allowed to. You have to try lahatzol ve'echad me'vodav to try to wound him or something, and only if you can't, then you can kill him. Given that over here, Zimri could withdraw from Cosby, and then at that point, then Pinchas can't do anything to him. Why would we say that he has a heter to kill Pinchas as a roidif? Why wouldn't we say instead that he has another alternative? So a couple of achronim talk about different angles on that. One of them being that one interesting one being that since he actually wants to do the Aveda, of course he could withdraw and stop doing the Aveda, but the whole point is he wants to do the Aveda, and therefore in that sense he can actually be considered that now in that state then Pinchas is a roidif to him. Now, let's go through the details of the story. The Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes, the Jewish men are getting involved with Bnei Simayov, and Vayichar Ach Hashem Yisrael, Hashem is angry, and a plague breaks out. So that Hashem tells Moshe, you have to judge and punish all the people who were involved with worshipping Baal Peor. So the Pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe al Shofti Yisrael. So Moshe says to the Shofti Yisrael, go judge and kill anybody who was involved with Baal Peor. So what happens now? Holach Shivta Shol Shimon Eitzel Zimri Ben Solu. Shevet Shimon now went to Zimri Ben Solu, who was their Nasi. As the Gemara is going to say later on, his real name is Shlumiel Ben Suri Shadei. We have him in the Nasiim, back from Parshas Bamidbar, and Nasi. But here in this context, it calls him Zimri Ben Solu for reasons that the Gemara will explain later on. Anyway, so they went to him. And they said to him, what's going on? Him done in Dinin Nefarshis. So they, the Sanhedrin and the ad hoc Bate Dinim that have just been set up, they're judging Dinin Nefarshis after Yoshev Estrosik, and you're sitting here and being quiet. You should be involved as well. The Riaf over here on Eniakov, as you can see over here, has some very long explanations on the whole story over here. And one of his points is, what do you sitting over here? They're telling him basically, like, they're trying to appeal to his covered. Like, look at that. You know, they're setting up Bate Dinim to deal with the sinners. And meanwhile, they ignored you, the Nasi of a whole Shevet, and pretended as though you don't matter and only the Shevet didn't matter. So, like, they're trying to raise him up. They're trying to encourage him to go and defy them in order to defend his own covered. So what did he do? Omar the Kibbutz Chavdalot Elof Nisrael, he gathers together 24,000 Jews, most if not all from his Shevet. Rashi points out in Parshas Pinchas, when you have the census in Parshas Pinchas, Shevet Shimon lost 37,000 some people during the 40 years in the Midbar, and so Rashi says it seems that most if not all the 24,000 who were killed in the plague, as we're going to talk about soon, must have been from his Shevet. The Zohar actually says even further, they weren't even really members of Shevet Shimon, they were members of the Erev Rab who had intermarried into Shevet Shimon, says the Zohar. So therefore, that's the Zohar explains, and there's an interesting point explained with that. You know, usually we try to end on a parasha and even an aliyah on a positive note. So why does Parashas Balak end with Vayu Amesim Amagefa Abba Asrim Aleph? That's a positive way to end a parasha, 24,000 Jews killed. So based on that Zohar, it becomes understandable. Those 24,000 don't really belong so much among the Jewish people anyhow, and now there's finally a chance that they got cleared out. And first, you know, a ger is a ger, but nevertheless, in other words, they shouldn't be so freely intermarrying into the body of the Jewish people when we know they were the troublemakers all the years in the Midbar. Anyway, so he gathers together 24,000 Jews, v'holachet al Kozvi, and he goes to Kozvi, who the Gemara is going to explain later on, was the daughter of one of the kings of Midian. Omaloi says to her, Hashmi li, listen to me. In other words, let's come be mizana with me. Omraloi, she says to him, Marsha explains that the point is when the Torah first tells what happened over there, it doesn't mention him by name yet. It mentions him by name only later on, at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, him and her. Right now, just at the Hine Ish b'nei Yisrael ba, a man came from b'nei Yisrael and he brought the Vayakar of Asimidyonis. So neither of them are mentioned by name, so we understand that it means coming together with his, accompanied by his whole Shevet, and he's bringing her and demanding, as the Gemara is going to say, who says that a Midyonis is Bechlal also. Anyway, so Omraloi, so she says to him, I'm not going along with you. Bas Melachani, I'm a daughter of a king. V'chein Sivali Abi, and my father told me, Loisi Shomi Elo L'Gadol Shebehem. You're only to submit to the greatest one among them. In other words, she wanted to actually be able to seduce Moshe himself. Rashi points out on the Psukim, you see the tremendous sinah that the Midyonim and Mayovim had for the Jewish people, that they're willing to take a Bas Melech princess and give her over for Znus. Anyway, so Zimri says to her, Afu Nasi Shevetu. You know what? I'm also a Nasi of a Shevet, so don't think that I'm a nothing as well. Veloyoy, not only that, Elishu Godomi Manu, and I'm actually in a way greater than Moshe. Shehu Sheni Labetin, Vuhu Shlishi Labetin. I, Zimri ben Solo, am the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, which is the second of Yaakov's sons. And Moshe comes from Shevet Levi, which is the third one of the sons, so therefore I outrank him. Maybe she's willing, maybe not. So Topsa Biblurissa, he grabbed her by her bluris. A bluris is a lock of hair, a chup, as they call it in Yiddish, a hairstyle that Goyim would wear in those times and later. You find a number of halachas in connection with a bluris. Ben Yehoyada points out the significance of grabbing her by that is to show I fully intend for her to remain a goita, and nevertheless I must still go and be mizana with her. In other words, don't think I want to be Magaya her or something, because then she'd have to shave off her bluris. But the verdict is, by grabbing her by the blutus, he's as much as to demonstrate that she'll remain a goita, and I'm still going to go ahead and do this. Anyway, the Havia is on Moshe, and he brings her to Moshe. Omale, and he says, Ben Amram, Zu Asura Oy Muteres. Is this one Asur or Muter? Why does he call him Ben Amram, by the way? Bechlau, we find a lot of times when throughout the 40 years, whenever people wanted to make fun of Moshe or talk badly about him, they would often call him Ben Amram. But Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, there was also a coded message in here. Your father himself, Amram, married his aunt, which is something that's also after the Torah was given. So don't think you come from such a yichus yourself, basically. So zu asura imateris v'imtoma asura, and if you're going to say she's osur because she's from Midian and she's a goita bas yisrei mihitir aloch, then who said you're allowed to marry the daughter of Yisrei? She's also a Midianis. Now, of course, the obvious answer is that was before Matan Torah, and this is Avan, and by Matan Torah everybody became Gerim, but Zimri is ignoring it. There's a sikha actually that ever points out that, you know, that's such an obvious thing. Anybody could have given the answer to that. But Zimri's point was also Moshe was not just a regular person. He had been a Kohen during the Shiva Siman Milurim, and there's an opinion that he remained a Kohen for the rest of his life, that he could serve in the Mishkan whenever he wanted. So in that sense, then Zimri is telling him, you know, fine, Matan Torah, Nishan Matan Torah, the fact is you're a Kohen, you should be holding yourself to a higher standard. How are you talking? You're married to a Midianis. And Moshe could have, of course, easily given the answer, but he didn't, because then it would look like, you know, he's just saying it out of his own self-interest, precisely because Zimri is making fun of him and his marriage. Kohen is also to a Geras, that's the point, right. So Mela, in other words, fine, I understand you married her before Matan Torah, but if you're a Kohen, then you need to be on a higher level still. Yeah. Okay. So Nisalman Menu Halacha, at that point Moshe forgot the halacha about what you're supposed to do in a case like this. Go Kulam Bevchia, and everybody burst out crying of what's gonna be now. Even Moshe himself doesn't know what to do. Why did Moshe forget it? As the Gemara says later on, in order that Pinchas, this way the Eved was leaving room for Pinchas to come and do and do the action and get the schar that he deserved for it. This explains why the pasuk says after when it says that this ish mibnei Yisrael ba that he came and brought the Midianis, and then it says that there he brought her in front of oyel moed, v'heima boichim pesach oyel moed, and they were crying by the entrance of the oyel moed. So what are they crying about? Because they had forgotten the halacha. Marsha points out the oyel moed was always the place where halacha comes from there. That was always where Hashem would speak to Moshe. That was also where the Sanhedrin would usually sit over there, Pesach oyel moed, and judge halacha. And now all of a sudden they're there by Pesach oyel moed in the seat of the Sanhedrin, and nobody knows what to do, and therefore everybody's crying. So now the pasuk says by Yair Pinchas ben Elazar. So now it says Pinchas ben Elazar saw. So Ma Ra, what did he see? If it just means, in other words, if he saw what's going on, everybody saw what's going on. So why does it specify that he Ra, implying that he saw something that nobody else did? Omar Rav, Ra Maisim in his halacha means he saw what was going on, and he, unlike everybody else, remembered the halacha. Omale, he says to Moshe, Achi Avi Abba, great uncle, because Moshe was Aaron's brother, and Aaron was Pinchas's grandfather. Loi kach lematani b'yudos chama Har Sinai, didn't you teach me when you came down from Har Sinai this din haboil aramas kanoim porgimboi? And I remember that. In fact, there's an explanation, I think, from Ben Yehoyada. He says that when he says limabtani, means that Moshe had taught this only to Pinchas and nobody else, and that was min hashamayim, so that only Pinchas would know the halacha and know what to do in this situation. Anyway, Moshe, instead of answering him directly, because again, like we said before, ein murin kain, he just tells him with a mushal, kreina de igurter, the one who reads the letter, iula have it prevanka, he should be the messenger. In other words, you're the one who's saying what's the right thing to do, then you should be the one to execute it, then you go ahead and do that. I'm not going to tell you that's what you should do, but in other words, he's telling him like in the form of a mushal. So that's one explanation of Vayar Pinchas, that Pinchas saw and remembered the halacha, unlike everybody else, or again, maybe he was the only one who actually knew the halacha in the first place, aside from Moshe, and now, because of that, he took action. Shmuel gives a different explanation of Vayar. Ra, he saw and he perceived and he realized that as the pasuk says, she'ein chochma ve'ein tvuna ve'ein eitzel v'neged Hashem, the pasuk in Mishlei. Now Mishlei was written hundreds of years later, but Tosfos points out in Gittin that we often find the Gemara that takes that it's for granted that people in earlier generations knew the concept that pasuk is later on going to write in words. So he realized, he saw and he realized this point. There's no chokhmah, there's no understanding, there's no counsel against Hashem, from which we learn, kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem, ein chilchin kavod l'rav, whenever there's a chilul Hashem involved, you don't show honor to the Rav. In other words, according to Rav, he actually did show honor to his Rav. He asks Moshe, didn't you teach me such and such? And Moshe tells him, basically, go ahead. According to Shmuel, he didn't even bother asking, because there's an open Chil Hashem going on over here, and Pinchas realized in a case like that, you don't ask the Rav, you just go and act. Which has applications in other areas of halacha as well. For example, we know a Talmud is not allowed to pass in halacha in front of his Rebbe, but if he sees somebody doing an Avera right in his presence, then he's obligated to speak up and do something about it, even if his Rebbe, for whatever reason, is not reacting. That's another application of this example of this principle of Ein Chochma, Ein Tvona, etc. Another example is a din, for example, that the Gemara brings in Brachas, that if you're walking down the street and you see somebody wearing Shatnez Daraisa, then you have to go rip it off him, even if he's your Rebbe, even if he's whatever, somebody you have to honor, because again, for the same reason, Ein Chochma, Ein Eitzah, etc. So that's another meaning of Vayar, what Pinchas saw that nobody else saw and realized that that's the right thing to do. And then a third explanation, Rav Yitzchak Amar, Omer of Elazar, Rosh B'malach, Hishkes Bam. He sees that a malach is coming and destroying and killing the people, and therefore he realizes to take action as fast as possible. As far as Shmuel's explanation, by the way, Rashi points out, the point is, again, it's Moda Halacha B'fnei Rabbi, because you don't want, why is it so important? Why is it Taka so important? Ein Chochma, Ein Eitzah, Ein Tvona, etc. is because otherwise, people are going to learn and think that such a thing is mutter, and you can't allow such an idea to take root by people B'chalal, and therefore Pinchas realized he has to take action on his own without even consulting with Moshe. And then again, once Rav Yitzchak also, he realizes he has to take action right away because there's a malach killing the people. What?
Who's the malach killing 24,000?
Among others, the 24,000. Yeah. So they were. We said that they were Zimri's supporters. They were supporting him when he went to Moshe with his chutzpahdik challenge. Then they were supporting him, and as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they were also surrounding the tent to prevent anybody from attacking Zimri and Cosby, which is why Pinchas, as we're going to go on to say, had to trick his way in.
What's the reason they're
Chayav Misa? Because they're abetting the Avera. They're helping out Zimri and the Avera. There was, by the way, a fast... What?
That's the way it works. It's only
helps someone. Yeah, I mean, it's Dine Shemayim. We're not talking about Dine Odom, Dine Odom. Of course, only if they actually worship Be'edim Basra, the whole nine yards. But here we're talking about Dine Shemayim, so it's different. By the way, there's a fascinating thing that's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that these 24,000 were later on nisgalgal in the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva who also passed away shalanergo covered zebazeh. Meanwhile, Rabbi Akiva, and we know from the Gemara in Nedarim that Rabbi Akiva ended up marrying the widow of Turnus Rufus, the famous Rosha. After he died, she became a Giyuris and eventually married Rabbi Akiva and brought him great wealth. So it's brought that Rabbi Akiva and she were Gilgal of Zimri and Cosby. So now, in other words, the idea is, let's explain what Zimri was doing. Here the Gemara is just saying that Zimri is being an outright chutzpanyak, but there's an explanation that really what he was trying to do is he is trying to accomplish something positive in the sense like to raise up Zimri to Kedusha, to raise up Cosby to Kedusha or something like that, but he's going about it the wrong way because he can't do such a thing through an Avera. So meanwhile, over 1,000 years later, Rabbi Akiva was mistaken that by marrying Turnus Rufus's ex-wife, the Beheter, and then being mistaken what Zimri and Cosby had been trying to do, but went the wrong way around it. So the Gemara continues. The pasuk says, "Vayokem mitoicha Eda." Pinchas got up from among the Eda, and Eda in Tanakh in Chumash at least usually means the Sanhedrin. So they're sitting and judging all the people. Rashi points out that earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara explains that what they had to do is they had to set up a lot of ad hoc bate dinim. You had many people who had been worshipping Pa'ur, and now are going to be Chayav Misa, so they couldn't just wait for everybody to come to one dig they sin. That would take too long. So Hashem told Moshe, Chalek lahem bate dinim, set up a bunch of small bate dinim of 23 each, so they can judge each of the people. So now, Pinchas was sitting in one of those tribunals, in one of those bate dinim. And it says he got up from among the Eda, Vayikach Ruimach Biyode, and he took a spear in his hand. So, the point is, the Pasuk is saying that he had to get up from the Eda and only then take the spear. Why is that? The Kanshe Nechnosim, the Kli Zayin, the Beis Medrash. From here you learn that you're not allowed to go with weapons into the Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash, maybe it's Alderach, like the way you have that iron is not supposed to be used on the, is not supposed to touch the Mizbeach, because Makatsu Yomav and Marich Yomav, maybe it has to do with that, maybe it has to do with Balabatish. You could say sometimes the debates in a Beis Medrash can get pretty heated, and you don't want somebody to accidentally or whatever, yeah. So, be that as it may, you're not allowed to go, so therefore you have to get up from the Eder, and only then can you take a spear. So what do you do? Now, he can't very well walk into the tent over there carrying a spear and expect they'd allow him in. So what do you do? Sholach shnana. He took off the tip of the spear, the metal tip, and he put it in his unkli. Rashi translates unkli as just his malbush and his clothing, so like a fold of his clothing. In some other places, it seems that unkli means specifically his sleeve. Whatever, he stuck it someplace inconspicuous, and then he uses the rest of it as a walking stick. The rest of it is made out of wood. So he just goes and is using it as a walking stick, so nobody realizes that he's coming with intent to kill. In other words, Marshall says, you know, the expression, Bayikach Roimach Biyodai, Roimach specifically, the word Roimach refers specifically to the metal tip. So Bayikach, he took it, Biyodai, in his hand, and he put it someplace concealed so that Shevet Shimon won't realize what he's about to do. So again, he's walking along over there, leaning on his staff. The Kivinshi Gates of Shiftish or Shimon, he comes to Shevet Shimon, where they're surrounding the tent where Zimri and Cosby are. Omar, so he needs to trick his way in. He says, you know what, I wanna join in also. After all, Hefen Latinus, Shiftish Levi, God of Mashal Shimon. Where do we ever find that Shevet Levi is greater than Shevet Shimon? Like we said before, Shevet Shimon is the older Shevet, and if they're allowed to do this kind of thing, then so are we. Omru, so they said, Hanichuloy, okay, so let him go in. Afulas, evidently he wants to go in to also do his needs, to also be Mizana together with Cosby or maybe to bring in somebody else or whatever. They said he tiru, in other words, the Marsha says, because the positive is by Yovai Achal Ishisrael, so that means he followed the Ishisrael into the tent. So that means they thought he's following him as in he wants to follow and do the same kind of thing as that Ishisrael as Zimri is doing. So they said, look at that, he tiru prushim as adabra, the prushim, the frumaks, have declared the thing mutter. It must be mutter because Pinchas is doing the same, is about to do the same kind of thing. So that's how Pinchas managed to trick his way in. Now, in there, as the pasuk says, he stabbed Zimri and Cosby. So Omer Rabbi Yochanan, shisha nisim nasul le Pinchas. At that point, six nisim happened to Pinchas. This is all Gemara is going to list six. You actually have that there's a Marshal refers to a Medrash that says that altogether there were 12 Nisim actually. Targum Yonasan on that Pasuk, which is probably not from Yonasan Menaziel, but whatever. That Targum also lists 12 Nisim, but here all Gemara says six. Echad Shahilo the Zimri Lifrish for Pirish. Number one, we said before that Zimri could withdraw and then Pinchas can't do anything to him. So he should have the Bzedah Hakeva, you would have expected him to withdraw and then he'd be safe from Pinchas. Bifrat, actually, it's interesting that in this connection, the Ravid brings, as far as this din of Kanoim Purgimboy, the Ravid holds you have to give Masurah like any other Misa. Even though it's not Misa space, then the Ravid holds he still needs Asurah, and otherwise the Kanoim can't be Pergea in him. So you expect if Zimri walks in there and announces, Zimri, you better stop or I'm going to kill you, and the natural thing you would expect to do is for Zimri to withdraw. But he didn't. Okay, I mean, the whole thing, Kanoim Purgimboy, is also a little unusual, but you need Epis Asra, because otherwise you can't say that he's Mazed. The whole point is, Lo Nitna Asra, El Lahavchen, Men Shevig Le Mazed, the whole point of Asra. Look, but you know what? You have a din, after all, you have a din as far as the regular din of Asra, we need two Adim. You have a din that, after all, you know, if a person... First of all, even the Talmud Chacham, that halacha still requires Asura. And second of all, the Asura has to be betrothed to the Dibur, otherwise the guy can claim, I forgot. So there has to be a Asura on the spot over there, and therefore the very natural thing would be that he should withdraw, so it was a nest that he didn't. And that's again, and that's going to the Ravid that you need Asura. Fine, even if you're going to say not like the Ravid, but nevertheless, all of a sudden a person is coming in over there, you would expect him to be taken aback or whatever, and yeah. A second thing is he should have spoken. He should have been the Derech HaTeva. He would have yelled out, people of Shevet Shimon, come help me. And he didn't. The third one is that Pinchas was able to aim precisely into the Zachros and Nachvos of Zimri and Cosby respectively, so that way everybody can see that they were there, that they were speared, that they were pierced while they were together, and now they could realize that Pinchas in fact had the right to kill him. They shouldn't just think, for example, maybe Pinchas had something against Zimri on a personal level and killed him. So that was the third ness. The Echad Shalem Nishmatu Min Aroyah. The fourth one is that the bodies didn't slip off the spear. So this way, again, if they did, then they wouldn't be in that position, and it wouldn't be a solid proof that Pinchas had the right to kill them, and people could claim that he did it for some ulterior motives or whatever. But now that if they stayed in that position on the spear, then it shows that Pinchas was right to do it. The Echad Shabal Malach V.S. Amashkes. Another one is that, the fifth one is that a Malach came in and raised up the lintel of the door of the tent. This way, in other words, it actually explains. Otherwise, he would have had to lower the spear. He would have had to tilt it downward in order to be able to get out there, and then the bodies would slip off. Eth Yosef asks in that case, and that's the same nest that they didn't slip off, then why repeat it? So he says the verdict is maybe that, no, what it means is Hashem raised up the lintel, so that way, as soon as everybody's waiting outside of there to see what's going to happen, and now, this way, as soon as possible, the door will be miraculously made higher, so that everybody, as soon as possible, can see what happened over here, that Pinchas is holding a spear with the two of them impaled on it. So that's the fifth one. The Echad Shabal Malach, the Hishkas Bam. The sixth one is that a Malach came and started killing the people, and this way, the people of Shevet Shimon are distracted by that, by people being killed, and then by people dying in the plague, and that way they didn't harm Pinchas. So again, those are the six Nissim, and again, Targum Yonasan and Midrashim list more Nissim as well. The Rebbe has an interesting point about it in a Sicha. There's a Gemara in Brachos that says that if a person sees Pinchas Bachaloyim, Pela Nasuloy, it means that he's going to deserve that a Pela happens to him. So what do you mean, a Pela? Here we have six Nissim that happened to Pinchas. And the gist of it, the Rebbe explains, is Pela doesn't mean one single Ness. It means like the whole thing is one status of Ness from beginning to end, and within that, there's one status of Pela from beginning to end, one thing that's completely beyond Derech HaTeva from beginning to end, and within that, there are individual Nissim 6 or 12 or however many you count them. So therefore, so Pinchas experienced that kind of Pella. It's not just you have 6 individual Nissim or 12 individual Nissim. The whole thing from beginning to end is one big Pella that it all worked. So the other ones were. One of them, for example, is that blood of them didn't drip on him so he wouldn't become Tomei. Another one is that they still stayed alive throughout this so that this way he doesn't become Tomei mess from carrying them. I don't remember what the other ones were. Maoshaw refers to one of them over there that Maoshaw explains a different one, which the Gemara is going to go on to say, that Pinchas was speaking in a way of protest against Hashem, and that he was saved from the Malachim, who wanted to harm him for that. That's considered a Ness as well, that he talked like that in a somewhat chutzpahdik way to Hashem. How could you do such a thing? And that the Malachim didn't harm him. So that would be another Ness as well. What? That's what we'll say then. So Pinchas came after he got out of the tent. He threw down the bodies in front of Hashem. On the front of him, he says, is it right that because of these two over Avera, 24,000 Jews should die? As the Pasuk says, 24,000 people were killed in the plague. Thus the Pasuk says in Tillim, Vayamad Pinchas Vayefalel. Pinchas got up Vayefalel. Now what does Vayefalel mean? The pastors, we would teach it means that he davened on behalf of the Jewish people. But then the word should be Vayefalel. Omer Abulazar Vayefalel Lainem. Now it doesn't say Vayefalel, he davened. Ela Vayefalel, where the word, the Shurdish Pelel means to argue or to fight. Means Malamed Kaviyachos also plilus in koinai. Means that Pinchas is arguing and then fighting with Hashem and saying, Hashem, hayitochen, how could you allow such a thing to happen? So again, the vote is, Marashah says that the Gemara is going to say now the Malachim were about to harm Pinchas for that. Hayitochen, how do you talk like that to Hashem? And Hashem defended Pinchas. So Marashah says that can be one of the nissim that happened to Pinchas as well, the fact that Hashem prevented the Malachim from harming him for talking like that to Hashem. So Bikra Malach HaSharis the Doichvay. So the Malach HaSharis wanted to push Pinchas away. How do you talk like that to Hashem? Omruloi, Omalahem. But Hashem tells them, Hanichuloi, leave him alone. Kanoi ben Kanoyu. He's a zealous person, a descendant of a zealous person. So we have Levi back by the Shimon and Levi back by the story of Shem. Hachzoyno Yasser Sakasenu, and they went and zealously wiped out the whole city of Shem for what they did to Dinah. And now Pinchas is following in that way, and he's acting with a proper kind of kanos as well. Marshall explains the vote is as opposed to Zimri. Zimri's from Shevet Shimon. They also had that kanos to begin with. And meanwhile, what did Zimri do? He went completely the wrong way. He didn't stay away from Znus, unlike Shimon had stood up against Znus. So Pinchas is continuing Taka in the way of his ancestor Levi, whereas Zimri did not continue in the way of his ancestor Shimon. There's actually a medrash about that, the medrash gives a mushel. You have two people who were poor, and both of them borrowed money from the king. One of them knows how to manage his money well, and he invests it, and eventually he's able to pay back the loan, and even there's a time when the king is short of money, and he goes and borrows from this guy. Meanwhile, the other guy just wastes the money, and eventually eventually has to borrow again from the king. So the nimshal is, Shimon and Levi both started out with a deficit. They both started out with a debt to Hashem. They wiped out Shem, and Yaakov criticized them for that. So what happens? So Levi takes that to heart and improves, and you see later on by the eagle, he so to speak paid that back by killing the people who the Shevet Levi, none of them sinned by the eagle, and they killed the people who were involved with the eagle. So like then they so to speak paid back the debt to Hashem. Now a generation later comes along Pinchas, and he so to speak even lends Hashem, and so to speak Hashem owes him one, which is why Hashem gives him a reward. As opposed to Shevet Shimon, we're saying when went from bad to worse, and then they owed Hashem for the first thing, and now they ended up compounding it by getting involved with this whole thing with Bnois Midian. I once thought, and I don't think I ever found a marker for this, but we do find that when the first time the brothers came down to Mitzrayim, so we know first Yosef locked them all up for a few days, then he says, fine, you can all go home, but I'm keeping one of you here as a hostage, and you have to bring back Binyamin, et cetera, et cetera. Which one did he keep behind? Shimon. So that means, in other words, and you think about it, it was a good few months before they came back the second time, because they had to use up all the food they brought, and they had to convince Yaakov that they need to go again, v'chola v'chola. So that means there was a considerable amount of time when Shimon is not together with Yaakov and with his brothers, and all the other ones were together. Maybe that had a certain influence on Shimon. Maybe that prevented Shimon from reaching a greater shleimus that he should have. I don't know. It's an idea of mine. I haven't found any marker for it.
Especially since they let him out of jail and they treated him as a
prisoner. Well, yeah, Yosef took him out of jail. So, yeah, so he had plenty of time to spend with Yosef, which is no small thing also, but maybe still you could say it doesn't compare to spending with Yaakov. Yeah. So anyway, so Hashem tells the Malachim, Kanoi ben Kanoi, who Meshiv Chema ben Meshiv Chema, who he's a one who takes away Hashem's anger, the descendant of one who takes away Hashem's anger. Back in Parshas Korach, when there was a plague after the Jewish people had complained, Atam Amitim Am Hashem, that a plague broke out, and then Aaron offered Turdus over there and took away Hashem's anger. And now Pinchas, his grandson, is following in the same way and taking away Hashem's anger again, as opposed to here you have Zimri, on the other hand, brought about Hashem's anger. In other words, Maharsha points out, you know, how does the pasuk go? Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Heshev es Chamasi me'al bnei Yisrael. So you could say Heshev es Chamasi refers to both of them. Pinchas was Heshev es Chamasi right now, but Aaron was also Heshev es Chamasi a generation earlier. So therefore, Hashem is telling the Malachim, don't be angry at Pinchas. He's earned the right to complain against Hashem, so to speak. Maharsha, by the way, refers here to a Pirush of his in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, where it also talks about Hashem's kanos, he explains there's two different emotions that are called kanoi in Lashon Kodesh, that are called kina in Lashon Kodesh. You have against somebody who has more accomplishments or more resources or whatever than you. That's not the kind of kanos we're talking about. Obviously, nobody has anything more than Hashem. Then you have the kind of kanos of zealousness that one's honor is being desecrated. That's the kind that Hashem has when people worship Avodah Zarah, for example, and that's the kind that Pinchas was showing here as well, that positive kind of kanos, and that's the kanos kinosi, that he's a worthy kanoi, and therefore Hashem says to the Malachim, don't try to harm him. Okay. Yen Yen Mashiach Ogorola. What? Yeah, it would be the second kind, that his honor is being desecrated, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yod Mir Mashiach Agola, Yadala Menachemov, continuing on this topic of Beis Yavena Shabbavo. So now, the Mikdash of La'asid is going to come down ready-made min ha-shamayim. First, the Rebbe says, it's first going to be revealed in the place where, to use the expression from the Gemara Megillah, Shenosa Mikdash V'yoshav Sham, that the Mikdash traveled and settled there. Originally it was in Bavel, in Zman HaGolos, which is based on Benishim of Bavel, and from there it will move to its proper place in Yerushalayim. So in other words, in short, the Rebbe is saying that the Beis Mikdash is going to come down and be Nisgala first in 770, and then go to Yerushalayim. And the Rebbe goes on to say, Yesh Loimer, that this is hinted in the Loshen HaRambam, when he says that Mashiach, one of the tasks that Mashiach has to accomplish to be Mashiach Vada, Yivnim Mikdash B'Mekoyma. He says he'll build the Beis Mikdash in its place. Why B'Mekoyma? You should say he built the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. So it hints that Mekoyma, the place where Melech HaMashiach lives at that time, is where he's going to first reestablish the Beis Mikdash. So in other words, he's in Golos. He's waiting to till Hashem gives him the signal to go and redeem the Jewish people and the Shechina from Golos. Meanwhile, the Melech HaMashiach builds a Mikdash Ma'at, which is Me'ein the Mikdash of Yerushalayim, as a preparation for the Mikdash La'asid, and then the Mikdash La'asid will be revealed there first, and from there, he, and then the Shechina and everything will all together go to Yerushalayim. Miyad Ma'ash. Continuing on halachas of tefillin, so we started talking about that the two tefillin are two separate mitzvahs, and technically they should have two different brachas. But on the other hand, you could pater yourself with one bracha, and therefore that's why you have to put them on one after the other. So now the nusach for the bracha of tefillin for yad asher kedushan mitzvah is on long yach tefillin. The nusach of the tefillin of the one for tefillin shodosh is asher kedushan mitzvah is on mitzvah tefillin. Now, in the word lohoniach, you have to say it with a comment. Lohoniach, not lahaniach with a patach. Because lahaniach with a patach wouldn't mean to put on, it would mean to abandon. For example, speaking of Yosef and his brothers, he says, achichama echad hanichu iti, leave one of your brothers with me. So if you were to say the bracha, lahaniach tefillin, that would mean that the mitzvah is to leave the tefillin alone. How Sfardim and Israelis do it, where they mostly pronounce comments and patach the same, I have no idea. But,
they make a difference.
They make a difference? Okay. Some do. I don't know. I don't think your average Israeli does, but okay, anyways. Fine.
Chamber.
Okay. Comments cotton, yes, but this is the comments club. All right, whatever. Okay. In the word tefillin, the lamed has a doggish. Because really, here we just learned about Vayamid Pinchas Vayifalel. Tefillin is Takam Eloshin Plila, which among other things, among the meanings of Plila, means testimony and proving something. Because tefillin are an eidus, they're a testimony for the whole world that the Shekhinah rests on us. V'ro kalame ha'aretz. G'shem Hashem nikra alecha. As Chazal darshan, eidu tefillin shebarosh. So therefore, tefillin are really tefillin. Meloshin polal, meloshin Vayamid Pinchas Vayifalel. And therefore, you have a dogish in the lamed. So for us, Ashkenazim doesn't make a lot of difference. We don't generally pronounce the double letters of Dagashim anyway, but for those in those varieties of Lashon Kodesh where they do, then they have to say Tfilin, which is, by the way, why in English it's usually spelled with two L's as well for the same reason.